Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. I bet there's a lot of people who are tuning in for the first time and are like, hey, who are these guys? It's The Real. And the answer is we're a two-man operation. We are totally self-made. We are a dozen years into our career. We do a lot of cool stuff. And on this podcast, we've had 300 plus guests stop by and have a fun and engaging and different type of conversation. And just so you guys know out there, we don't take ourselves too seriously. We do like to think of this as a real profession, and we take that seriously. But at the end of the day, we're not like, oh my God, you know.
The podcast is
the be-all, end-all. We have to get this major guest to get this many listens. And no, it's just, do we put good product out there? Are we happy at the end of the day? And hopefully, some people tune in and can get something out of this conversation. So
now we have to pivot and talk to the people who actually tune in week after week.
Okay.
And explain why we would have Russ on the podcast.
Yeah, I guess that is the question, because if the opportunity came to someone like us, but not us, to get Russ on the podcast, there is an easy answer. It's like, yes, Russ, the guy who, you know, has had these crazy interviews where it's like back and forth and battling and you get a big headline out of it. Okay, cool. Yeah, you can sell that. And the other thing is to be like, well, fuck him. No, I don't want that type of conversation. But the more interesting thing maybe is to do neither one of those yeses.
What?
Or not the yes and not the no.
I still don't know what that means.
Is to have the conversation that Russ has not had before.
Right, which is what we did. And I think that, you know, here's somebody who is usually responding to something and hasn't really told his story in a, you know, where did he come from sort of way.
Yeah. Who are you, Russ?
And
not,
I think that
not who are you, Russ?
Yeah. There have been glimpses of that in other interviews. I saw the pull up with Joe Budden.
Yep.
And he talks about how he had to take care of his family at a very vulnerable point. And that's what sold us on having him over here.
Well, that plus you did speak with a bunch of people around.
I spoke to Joe. I spoke to our friend Amir, Blame the Label.
I spoke to Jonathan Mannion at length. There is something to, hey, maybe there's another side to us. Maybe there's a deeper part to his soul. And maybe we can have a conversation that really opens that up. And I want to salute Russ, too, for being open to the conversation that we had, because I think it's easy for him to just do the same thing that he had done time and time again. This was something new. I'm glad that we got a chance to do this, and I'm excited for all of you guys out there, whether you're new to us or whether you've listened to all of our episodes, to hear this for yourself.
And before we actually get into this conversation, we've got 301 other episodes with people like Jonathan Mannion and Illmind, who both talk about Russ. Also, Joe Budden talks about Russ. We've got episodes with people you've heard of, people you haven't heard of, people you should hear of. Go to itsthereal.com or subscribe on whatever streaming platform you're currently listening on. Subscribe to our podcast. Why not?
And while all of those episodes, I can happily say, sound excellent, this intro should sound even more excellent. Because the good people at photosavings.com sent us a new audio interface. And Jeff, when I tell you that this is like before the internet and after the internet, I haven't stopped talking about this for days now.
No.
It is the greatest thing to be able to record on different tracks, to be able to adjust the volume separately. This is like night and day. Shout out to our friends over at photosavings.com. And please send them some business, because they were good to us. You should be good to them. They are dope. They sent us this in no time, and we are thrilled to
be an actual podcast.
Yeah.
It only took us 300 episodes.
That's
but
right.
We made it to a place where now you can actually listen to us and enjoy it.
We are real boys now.
Yes.
Shout out to photosavings.com. Shout out to all you guys out there. Jeff, when do you want to get into this episode?
Right now.
All right, you cool?
Yeah,
you
I'm
cool?
Ready.
Yep.
All right.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Peddling Rocks, a.k.a. the Flintstones.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. you ain't from Russia, so bitch, why you Russian, a.k.a. the GOP.
It's Russ.
Yes, your third favorite podcast to waste time with. It's The Real. Russ, what's happening?
living the dream. This is great. This got very intense very quick.
Having like a very like basic conversation about Logic versus GarageBand.
Yeah, we were talking just like audio. Chaos. Yeah. Well, first of all, congratulations on your new project.
Thank you.
As we were just mentioning, we've had a bunch of your friends, collaborators, people you know up here recently.
Yeah.
Most recently, we had Jonathan Mannion, who's a longtime friend of ours, who told us that you hit him up and you were like, yo, I don't care what the label says.
Yeah.
I don't care like what obstacles we have.
Yeah.
I want to make this collaboration happen.
Yeah.
What meant so much to you about what Jonathan Mannion brings to cover art, whatever it is, to get him on board to fly out to the Swiss Alps to work together?
I think, I mean, for starters, his work is amazing. So, like, regardless of who you are, if I don't think your work is great, then it doesn't matter. But his work is amazing. And then he's just iconic. Like, I just wanted to be part of a Jonathan Mannion thing. Like, I wanted to be part of that. I remember going to Swiss Beats House, and he's showing me, like, pictures that he has hung up that are Jonathan Mannion photos, and I'm like, man, like the DMX one and all these Jay-Z covers, it's like, yo, I gotta get like something. So I was like, yo, let's just fly to the Swiss Alps and be maniacs.
Had you met him before?
In the club, and we were both drunk. And like, it was the most random thing, because like, I didn't know if he knew who I was, and it was just like a drunk running into each other in a club in Atlanta. Like, yeah, you know how it's like, oh, yeah, we should work.
Oh.
But I was dead serious. I was like, nah, we really should.
Yo, I don't know about you, but anytime we're out in a club or in a studio, by the way, too, and the music's blasting, I can never have a, like a real like conversation
at
the phone or in person. So I just like break out the Notes app and I'm like type something out and like hand it to the person, you know? Like that's how I do
That's a good move.
But you and John connected like that.
Yeah.
And what's the time difference between that first meeting and heading out to the Alps?
3 weeks.
That's it?
That's it.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, because that was in November and we were in the Alps in December, so.
Oh.
Did you guys, like, travel together over there?
Yeah.
Did you guys talk on the plane?
No, because they were. Were they on the same flight? Yeah, they were on the same flight, but yeah, just different, like, seating.
So then you get out there. Had you been to the Swiss Alps before?
No, but I've been to Switzerland a bunch of times, but never the Alps.
Yeah.
And I was trying to find, like, we were going to go to the Dolomites, like, in Italy, the mountains in Italy, but I was just trying to find mountains with snow. That's what I knew I wanted.
You can find that here.
Yeah, yeah. I could have. We could have just gone to anywhere. Colorado.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I was like, nah, we gotta just do the Swiss Alps just because.
How much of that is about like the story behind it and like posts leading up
to
it?
I'm just also like nuts. Like I like doing
things.
Oh,
no, I got that part. Yeah.
Like if I'm going to do something, I'm trying to go all the way. Like I'm just really OD like that. So I'm like, yeah, because at first we're like, oh, we could just go to like Jackson Hole, Wyoming or like, you know, Canada. But I was like, yeah, but that's not nearly as cool of a sentence to be like, we went to the Swiss Alps.
So is it exactly how you envisioned it?
It was better. It was way better.
That's what you want.
Yeah, it was better. And it was just like I said, I just think it's amazing to have that memory.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we flew to the Swiss Alps to do a photo shoot.
With Jonathan
Mannion.
It felt
so much more than a photo shoot, though. Like, that was the thing. Working with him, it was just so much more about like creating a like a vision and the whole thing. It was just amazing.
Well, what were you looking to project or portray in that still image?
You know what I wanted? Because a lot of my photo shoots are kind of not directed by me, but they're in a photo studio, you know? So you can only do so much in a photo studio. And I kind of told him, because I have so much respect for him and his work, like, yo, you tell me what you want to do. You send me inspiration, like setups, what you want to do, like. And he sent me like, oh, I want you in a suit. I want you this. Like, here's a crazy ski mask I got you. Like, he like really orchestrated the whole thing, and I was super down to just follow his lead. So it was dope.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. We like to go through a person's full journey. Let's go back to the very, very beginning.
Okay.
Where are you originally from?
I was born in New Jersey, but I was raised in Atlanta.
So what part of New Jersey do you live in?
We moved when I was a baby. So
oh, got it. So not like, even.
Yeah, not even.
Do you think New Jersey claims you?
They have, which I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, my dad was born and raised in New Jersey, and my family's still all in New Jersey. So, like, I would come up here, you know, mad time. So, like, I do have connection to Jersey.
Do you know? Feel New Jersey?
I think people tell me.
Yeah, you sort of, like, exude New Jersey.
Yeah. Yeah. You're really a douchebag.
No, so if people are like, what exit, you know, are you from? You're like, no, I don't know,
no
man,
idea.
You know.
Nah, but I think, yeah, from what I've been told, what New Jersey is. And but, like, my dad, like I said, is born and raised, big Italian family, New Jersey, so.
And you guys moved down to Atlanta.
Yeah, so we moved around a little bit. We bounced from, like, North Carolina and then Kentucky and then North Carolina again and then Georgia. Atlanta when I was 12.
What did your dad do?
So at first he was working at a bank and then that, like, the bank dissolved or something happened, and then he went to go work at this advertising agency, which is why we ended up moving to Atlanta. And then that didn't work out, so then he started his own thing, which didn't work out. But luckily, the music, that was right when my music started to actually be making money. So then my music kind of, like, the ship was sinking. I have an old song called Titanic because the ship was sinking, and then the music perfectly started making money at the right time and kind of saved it.
So, but while that was happening, I mean, like, you know, you're a kid.
Right.
How aware were you of your family's, like, any troubles?
Not that, and I'll give a lot of credit to them. It was way more fucked up than they let on, you know? They did a really good job at hiding it, but then it got to too bad of a point where they had to ask, hey, so we need money.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're not being able, like, we can't pay certain things. And that's when it got, like, real. Like, when your dad's asking you for gas money, it's like, Jesus, like, oh, so it's bad. You know?
But while you're in those, you know, not before it gets to really bad, while you're in those years, it's like, no, this is just, like, how we live.
Right.
Yeah, you don't even know.
No, you don't. You don't at all. And then, like, yeah, then the bomb gets dropped, and you're like, oh, shit, okay.
Or do you come from a big family?
No, so it's just me, my older brother, and my little sister.
You're the middle child.
Yes.
Right on. How much older is your older brother?
A year.
Oh, right on.
And then my sister's 5 years younger.
So are you and your brother very close?
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah. He's my personal trainer and nutritionist, which you can't tell by my lack of discipline for my physique. But yeah, he is.
So growing up, moving around a bit, was it tough to, like, move to a new school?
It was really hard because I would, you know, I would make these friendships that... Especially North Carolina. I was in North Carolina for a while. I was like 9 years type of shit. And
that's
a
significant amount.
Yeah. So that's like the formative. I had best friends. Like best friends. And I remember crying when we had to move.
Yeah.
And we moved to Kentucky for like a year, which was just a really bizarre. Like, when I look back at it, it's like, what the fuck were we doing in Kentucky? Like, it's really bizarre.
Do you forget the fact that you had lived in, like, it's just such a blip that you're just like, what was that?
Kentucky for me feels like 2 days.
Wow.
I have like two memories.
I mean, honestly, 1 year is a short amount of time.
Yeah, no, it really is. And like, a whole bunch of weird shit happened in Kentucky that, like, I look back at, like, my dad's kids from his previous marriage. Like, one of them was living with us for, like, apparently 8 months. But if you ask me, I thought she came by to visit for 3 seconds. But she was, like, apparently living with us. But I was so young. I was in second grade or first grade. But then, yeah, then we moved back to North Carolina, which was like a roller coaster because I got to go like back to my friends.
Yeah.
And then we had to move again. I was like, Jesus Christ, this is insane. So
wait, are you still in touch with your father's other kids?
No, not really.
That's a whole thing?
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Gotcha.
So then we moved to Atlanta and I was like, man, this is insane. I remember moving to Atlanta when I was 12 and like for the first couple weeks, you're still just like, talking to your friends in North Carolina. You're not even trying to, like, acclimate.
Right.
But then after a while, you're like, nah, this isn't going to work.
Is your brother old enough, older than you?
Yeah.
To have a big influence on your music, your style?
No, because he wasn't. We were always just really close. He was only a year older, you know? He was born in 91. I'm 92. So it wasn't like a 10-year older brother.
Sure.
We were figuring things out together kind of as we went. And he's also, like, much more introverted than I am and keeps to himself. Like, you would not think that I'm able to do
that. What were you into at that age then?
Sports. Sports and hip-hop and music. But, like, I was just playing guitar and, you know, that whole thing and just trying to make beats. You know, I wasn't even thinking about rapping. Although it's weird. Like, I had a weird kind of journey to end up here. Because when I was, like, 9... or 7 or something like that, I was writing raps in a notebook because, like, G-Unit and 50 Cent was huge.
Yeah.
And then I kind of went away from that and came back to when I was 14 when I started making beats, and then I started rapping for real at 19. So it was, like, all a little, like, fucking full circle situation.
So 50, G-Unit,
yes.
Everything is hidden.
Yes.
Is that in your, like, universe because of MTV?
Yeah, I remember seeing the In the Club video when, like, 50 comes hanging down from the, which was so epic. And I remember watching the Cleaning Out My Closet video. And, yeah, those were, like, there was always music in my house because my parents would, like, put on, you know, the Bee Gees and Luther Vandross and, you know, Mamas and Papas and, like, classic rock, ABBA, Kansas, and just, like, dance around. There was always music in the house. And for me, 50 and Eminem were surprisingly a natural segue. Because it was always really heavy melody,
Yeah. So they were listening to it too, or just you?
My dad is a huge Eminem fan.
Wow.
Like, huge. My mom is not. My mom like never really crossed over.
But... Well, you know, Eminem does have issues with his yeah. his mom.
She would always be like, "He sounds so angry."
So, yeah. So if you're getting all those influences, you know, from musically from your parents yeah. And your environment and whatever's going on,
right?
What are you drawn to? If it's you said you left, you know, the 50 and the M camp yeah. and all that. What would you get drawn into?
Then it was like Kanye was the next thing, and it was probably Wayne before Kanye. Mm. Yeah, Lil Wayne, Kanye. I didn't even get onto like Jay-Z till 18 because it was too advanced. Like the content was too advanced for me.
And also you were moving further south.
Yeah.
And so like you're probably getting drawn into like right. all of that.
And I remember like in high school, so I graduated in 2010, mm-hmm. right? So like high school was the time. Those years of 06 to 2010 is when Wayne was going crazy.
Oh yeah. my God.
So being in high school when Lil Wayne was just dropping all these mixtapes and all these songs was nuts.
Well, how did you get that music?
Dat Piff.
Oh man.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. yeah. Dat Piff, and I'm sure we were stealing stuff.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I mean, we were stealing stuff on Dat Piff. Yeah. That's the whole thing.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is so sad.
So
I apologize.
So did you stay?
Wiz Khalifa, too.
Yeah, shout out to KP and everybody over at Dat Piff.
Yeah.
yeah.
So Wiz Khalifa, Lil Wayne, yeah. what did you get from all these guys?
At the time, it was just enjoyment. I wasn't even thinking of rapping. Like, I was just listening to them. But then I started making beats when I was 14. So,
even beyond that, you're somebody who later on would go to produce content and more content and more content. And that did really start with Wayne.
Yeah, that's what I did. Like, once I started to do my own thing, I went back and learned, like, man, Lil Wayne's work ethic was nuts.
Yeah.
And I always remember, like, we had a cutout of a magazine where he said like he dropped 77 songs in 2007 or something like that. Like I just remember being like, this is insane. If you do this, you will blow up. So I remember really modeling a lot of it, of the approach that I had after like Wayne's onslaught of music.
Did your friends understand your musical ambition?
Yeah, my best friend Boogis, who's sitting over here, it was like really me and him who just masterminded this whole thing. You know, the studio was in his mom's basement, and we had cutouts of every rapper in there in the magazines, and yeah, we were just going hard.
Like cutouts meaning they were just like on the wall, or
yeah, well, not like cutouts of them. I mean, like taking a magazine, ripping out this picture, and posting it on the wall, and posters, and like of every rapper, artist we didn't even like necessarily listen to. Just we wanted to be surrounded by the rap game, you know, in our studio. So,
because who are you but a you know a high school junior?
Kid, yeah. Yeah.
So what exactly is in that studio?
Two speakers, a computer, and a mic and an interface. That was it.
And you're making beats off of?
My laptop, the keyboard, the Home Row keys. I still do that.
Yeah?
Yeah, on Logic. Everything is on Logic.
Because that's what you're used to?
That's what I'm used to. Yeah. I started on GarageBand, so like the natural, even looking at this, I was like, it looks like Logic.
Yeah.
The natural next step was to move to Logic. And so I just stayed there. I think comfortability is just kind of what it's all about. There's no one program better or whatever.
For sure. Yeah. Were there other kids who were doing production in your high school?
No. Looking back now, there was one other kid who I was like really close with at the time who was using Fruity Loops.
Yeah.
And making beats. And that's also what really helped me start making beats, was that I had a friend who lived in my neighborhood who I was really close to, also making beats, also super musical. So we used to make these terrible beats and just think that they were amazing. And like go down to the neighborhood park and like parade them around like they were like Kanye West beats.
Yeah, did you sit in your car and just turn the volume all the way up? Yeah.
I thought they were the greatest beats.
Like, who is this guy?
I know, yeah.
Like, this is the hardest shit ever. Y'all don't know anything.
Well, who were you modeling your stuff after?
It was really Dre influenced. Dr. Dre and like Storch are why I started making beats musically. So all of it was very like
piano driven,
and strings.
Yeah.
But like my skill level of that at 14.
Where'd you get your drums constructed?
My drums, at first I was using the stock drums because they were terrible. But then I would just be on the internet downloading drum kits.
Yeah.
Like downloading the Scott Storch drum kit, which probably was not a Scott Storch drum kit. This is before Splice, like so nothing was official. It just they called it Scott Storch drum kit. So like if I pull up my old laptop, like you'll see I have the Pharrell drum kit, the
Blue
One, the Alchemist, the Dre, that like everyone's unofficial drum kit. I was downloading drums for like 10 years. It was insane.
So you're recording You're producing, yeah. You're doing all that stuff in that basement.
Yeah.
Did you go out and perform?
Yeah, we would do. So I wasn't even rapping yet. I was really just producing for Bugis. So
right.
Yeah, we would go do, like, Bugis would do, you know, these open mic type of things, or we would go to colleges around and perform at colleges and Clemson, Ole Miss, or we would be in the basement of a frat house in UGA way too many times, just performing for a bunch of drunk kids that don't care what's going on.
Don't know your music.
Don't know the music, like, don't care, but we're performing like it's the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's, like, so intense, but it was awesome.
Were those Scott Storch drums hitting?
Yeah, they were hard. At that time, they were hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, where was your actual first show?
My first show as, like, Russ, the headline artist, was Tumwater, Washington, right? Or was it Kennesaw, technically?
How'd you get out there?
Yeah, I wouldn't even really count that, but shout out to Kennesaw. I went to Kennesaw State for, like, 2 weeks.
Right.
And I performed there for, like, 4 kids. But I don't really... But so Tumwater, Washington.
Yeah. Have you seen any of those 4 kids ever since?
One of the kids, I think actually a couple of them, are such diehard fans. It was like he had the tattoo already, like, and he's still a huge fan. His name's Nick Everett. And like we refer to like certain diehard fans as just, oh yeah, that's another Nick Everett. Like he's
awesome.
Yeah, he's an archetype. Yeah. Like he's become like like the one. Yeah.
Right. Like, are you Nick Everett though?
Yeah. But you know, so we've had shows
Tumwater was the first show.
We've had shows where, you know, it's sold out and it's like, all right, 600 people max could have been there, right?
Right.
We know the ticket sales, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's still like thousands of people who were like, oh, I was at that show that you guys did.
Right.
It was just like, it's like Woodstock, you know, it's just like everybody was there, right?
Well, you know what I find funny is like I'll do a show for like back in the day where it's, you know, 300 kids sold out. And, like, fans hit me up like, man, I remember when you came in, there was 10 people. I'm like, bro, there was not 10. It was sold out.
There were 4 people.
It was
and all
11.
Of them were Nick Everett.
So did you ever consider another rap name rather than your real name?
When I was producing, I was DJ Ripley because it was like,
believe it or not. Yeah, sure.
I mean, you were 14. Great. It's fine. Yeah.
I was like 17.
Did
so
you?
It's not as great.
Yeah, then forget it.
Did your parents fuck with the music?
They really encouraged it.
Yeah?
My dad's a huge music head. So
that's
is my
awesome.
Mom. So, yeah, they were really supportive of it. They just didn't want us cursing.
Yeah. How long did you abide by that?
The not cursing thing?
Yeah.
We never abided by that.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So, would you just, like, edit it for your parents, like, live? Just, like, turn it down, like, whenever you curse?
No, they didn't really care that much. They just wanted it, like, my dad had a conversation with me and Bugis one time at a dinner and was like, you know, you have to romance the audience. Like, my dad is just, he's a lot. He he knows everything, if you, according to him.
Yeah.
But
he's from New Jersey.
He was like, you have to romance. Like, you don't want to just, you know, just get right to fucking, da, 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 da. You got to, like, you know, ease it in or whatever. I don't know. It was like a weird conversation. But
I feel like I'm learning a lot.
Yeah, it's like the birds and the beats.
Yeah, but he was like talking about, you don't want to just, you guys come out the gate just saying, fuck this shit. And he's like, you know, if you look at a salad bowl, you don't want to just call it a salad bowl every time. Maybe you want to call it something else or get creative. I don't know. He attributes all of my metaphors and success of my lyricism to that conversation.
Oh, sure.
If you ask him, he's like, it all changed when I had that conversation.
For the record, you don't want to say fuck the police. You want to make love to the police.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I don't, yeah.
By the way, like shout out to your dad who
he's
really
awesome.
Set everything off for you.
Yeah,
so.
I get, like, it's funny. I get my charisma and, like, personality from my dad for sure. Like, it's so funny how opposite him and my mom are. My mom is very introverted.
Like your brother.
Yeah, like my brother. And, you know, I love books too, but they were always really just big readers and they like staying in the house and they don't like going out like that. Da, 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 da. And then my dad is the life of the party, walking around dancing, talking shit, making jokes. So, you know, I have introverted aspects of me. Sometimes I want to just stay in and whatever. But yeah, like my mom can never be on a stage.
Yeah.
She'd like crumble, you know?
Well, did you ever like feel nervous going out on stage?
I used to be really, really nervous. I had really bad stage fright when the shows were not our fans, when we were just like...
When you were the opener for...
Yeah, and I didn't have any songs out. This is when it was just Bugis and I would be on some song singing a hook or something. So Bugis would be opening for someone... And so none of the people there are to see anyone. And then I'd be just on stage having to, like, rap my part or whatever. And it was, like, nerve-wracking because I was, like, I didn't have the confidence of my shit yet because, number one, I was new to performing. I don't know what the rules were. and I didn't have my own music out. I didn't have fans. So, yeah, I just used to get super drunk, which I ended up watching back and being like, well, you know what? As scared as I am, this sounds like dog shit, and that's what I care about the most, so yeah. I should stop doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first time that people in the crowd hit you with your own lyrics right back?
It was probably...
Nick Everett.
Yeah, it was definitely Nick Everett's situation. Yeah. Oh, you know what? Do those Atlanta shows count as my first shows? But that wasn't my show. That was like Diamond, all the shows. Yeah, so the first time was, it was probably these weird little like Atlanta showcases we would do. We would go like book out the Masquerade in Atlanta, like scrounge together $500 or $1,000, get people to help us throw in money and do shows. And like that was cool. There'd be 10 people there, but they all knew the words, which was like, that was cool. But the first like proper show where there was like 200 kids that all knew the words was in Belgium, actually, 2014.
Wow.
So bizarre.
Belgium?
Yeah, how'd you get out
Antwerp,
there?
Antwerp, Belgium. So the craziest thing with this is when I was on Facebook, like regular Facebook, and a kid, this kid named Saber, had sent me a message. He was this artist from Belgium, and he was just like, I love your stuff. I'm an artist too. And this is like, you know, I had a Facebook. Like, there was no Instagram, like Twitter.
This is your personal Facebook.
Personal Facebook. Like, and he just sent me a message, and he was an artist, and I listened to his song. I have no idea what he's saying because he's rapping in Flemish. I was just like, this sounds awesome, though. So, yeah, let's do a song. And I did a song with him. He's from Antwerp, and it went huge for, like, as far as scaling. It went huge, but it was 200 kids. But that was the inception of my Belgium fan base. So then his manager set up a show for me out there, and it was really dope. It was sold out. It was my first show, first time ever leaving the country, first show out of the country, and it was sold out.
Like, did you get on that flight being like, what?
I didn't know what the fuck was going on, and I definitely didn't assume it was going to be sold out.
You went with some other people, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, me, Boogis, and yeah.
Because imagine you go over there by yourself, and you're like, I don't know.
Yeah, I was like, it was culture shock and just sensory overload because I'd never left the country before. And then the fact, like, we pull up to the venue, and I'm like, is anyone coming? Like, and I remember asking the promoter. There's still a video of it on my Instagram of me asking the promoter, like, is it sold out? And he's like, yep, first time in Belgium, sold out, da-da-da-da. And it was crazy as shit.
Man.
Those 300 kids or 250 felt like 2,000.
Yeah,
nuts.
I bet.
Yeah, it was nuts.
I want to talk about the first time you were on MTV, which was through Rob Markman.
Yes.
But... and that was on the
Rap Get in the Game.
Yeah. So, but that was a Boogis thing, right?
So, yeah, the first time was Boogis was on Get in the Game, and we were talking to Trina and Sway. Or no, Trina. No, it was just Trina and Rob Markman. Or was it Trina and Sway? Trina and Sway. And then the second time was just Rob Markman and... Juicy J, I believe.
Wow.
On my rap fix, yeah.
So first of all, like, how does, like, I'm assuming that you reached out to every single blog. I'm assuming, like, you seem like that type of kid.
Boogis harassed Rob Markman on Twitter about 2K. Beating him in 2K.
Really?
Literally how we got
what did, and this might be a better question for Boogis, but, like, what was Boogis saying to Rob Markman about 2K?
What were you, you were just saying you could beat him and he's trash.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
By the way, fact.
Yeah.
Just repeatedly. And then he was like, oh, I do music, whatever. And then Rob checked out the music and fucked with it. And that's how Boogis got on the Get in the Game segment.
But you were like also there.
I was also there, yeah, because I produced the song that was on. And at that time, I was producing everything Boogis was doing. So it was a very like, you know, we're hanging out all the time. So yeah, we did the Get in the Game segment together.
But what I noticed about that clip was that like, yes, Boogis had a presence, but like that you definitely, yeah, like the camera was there and you, yeah.
Yeah, I was annoying.
Yeah.
I remember telling Trina that she looks good and I couldn't see Trina because I was just like nervous babbling about something stupid. Like, shut up, bro. You can't see me. I know you don't know if I look good or not.
But, you know, what? Tell me about coming from behind the scenes.
Yeah, the transition.
Yeah.
I attribute that to Boogis as well. It was one night in the studio in Boogis' house, and I remember I was just doing like a hook or something, which I would like not frequently do, but there was times I would just do a hook or a verse or whatever. And I remember turning around to Boogis. I was in the like booth, which was really just underneath the staircase, and I was like, yo, should I start rapping? And Boogis instantly was just like, hell yeah, do that shit. And that was it. That was like
that was the conversation.
That was it. That was the turn.
Okay.
And I instantly started doing it. That was 2011.
at the end of high school.
Yeah.
And okay, we know that you went on to go to college for a couple weeks.
Yeah, well, a semester and a half.
But
we all know that like timing it doesn't work with you.
Yeah, exactly. So,
like,
yeah.
Like Kentucky was 2 days, but it was actually 8 months.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Who knows? Yeah.
So you were there for a short amount of time.
Sure.
What were you looking to get out of college when you graduated high school?
I think I was just doing college because it was the like, I was going through the motions. It was just what you do.
Yeah.
You know, like the first time I saw the school I went to was on move-in day. Like I didn't give a shit.
You just applied and
applied anywhere else?
Yeah. I applied to the school, Georgia State, which is in Atlanta, which I actually really wanted to go to. But I wanted to be like in the music program. And they said, you can't audition if you don't know how to read music, which I didn't and I don't. So I was like, all right, well, fuck. And I probably like, not that I should have still gone there, but my like one of my good friends at the time was going to Valdosta State. And I was just like,
where's that?
Like south Georgia, like damn near Florida. And I was just like, whatever. Like I can get in there because it was a way easier school to get into. So I was like, fuck it. So I got in there and just, we roomed together and that was that.
So you didn't have like necessarily like a game plan?
No, I didn't. I was just, at that time, we had just put out the Boogis' first like project, the Boogis demo that I produced the whole thing on. And we were like, you know, I was passing it around at school. I was just like focused on producing.
Yeah.
That's it. But also in that dorm room is when I started to fuck around with my own songs. I didn't have a mic. I would just use the mic on the laptop.
Man.
And just sit there and make the worst songs. Oh my God, bro. I have a playlist on my computer.
Yeah.
That's just like 10 dorm room songs that are the worst songs and worst recordings.
How often do you go back and listen to them?
I usually never, but I went back very recently. And I was like, you know what? Like, this is so bad, but you couldn't even tell me that back then. Like, I thought they were so great. And it's like, it's weird to have that confidence.
But do you see the, like...
I saw the potential. Like, yeah. my vocal delivery was trash. My voice sounded stupid, but the melodies I was doing and the songwriting was there. Like, you could tell I knew how to write a song.
Yeah.
My execution was just terrible.
Yeah.
But, like, I definitely could write a song. I had an understanding of melodies and bring this one back for sure.
Man, when I applied to film school at Syracuse, right?
Uh-huh.
And when I got in, you know, it was because of a 30-minute movie that I had made or whatever.
Fire.
Yeah. But like you, it's like you look back at it, it's just like, well, it wasn't that good, but you do see the seeds. But I'm always impressed by the people who can see the little thing and imagine what it can turn into.
Yeah, that's like that delusional level of self-belief and confidence is really what propelled me forward. Because when I look, like I always tell this to myself and I put it in my book too, like if that 17-year-old kid with those songs came up to the 27-year-old me now and was like, yo, what do you think? I would be like, in my head, I'd be like, there's no way this is going to work. Like, you're so bad. Like, I don't see this working for you at all. But then I say that the 17-year-old me would have never even asked the 27-year-old because he thought he was the shit.
So maybe the key is for that 17-year-old to just bug the fuck out of you about 2K on Twitter.
No, you know what? The key is that the 17-year-old me was perfectly in the right headspace because I didn't need or want the 27-year-old me's opinion. Because if I would have been looking for that and I would have told myself, no, that's whack, then maybe I would have stopped.
Right.
Because if you're already looking for, like, validation, it means that you're, you know, you could probably be swayed one way or another.
But you were looking for validation.
I was, but I think I was more so looking for my own validation first.
Like, right.
As long as I thought, like, it was hard, when you're cool.
When you're hitting up, like, you know, the two dope boys and wherever else.
Yes, yes. Like, so I was looking for, yeah, for sure. I was looking for media validation of really just promoting it. I just wanted visibility, but I wasn't looking for, like, I'd have writers hit me back that said, no, I don't like the hi-hats or something. Like, I thought all of them were insanely wrong.
Yeah.
I was like, no, like, this is not what we're not discussing if my music is good or not. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was not, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That wasn't even like what I was just like posted.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we're not talking about the music.
But it's funny, when we speak to kids at different like levels of school, like it could be college, it could be high school. We've talked to fifth graders about this. It's about changing like your perception of what success is as well.
Yes,
you know,
sure.
Because at that age, you're like, well, if I get on a blog, that's what's meaningful.
Oh my God, when we got on Two Dope Boys, we went nuts.
Right. But if you look back at it now, you're like, oh, I didn't need that validation.
Right.
You're like, I just needed to be sure of myself.
100%.
And there is that thing too with, and we talk about this a lot, like Steve Jobs didn't go out and like beta test his things. He wasn't like, oh, well, what do you guys want? It was, you guys need an iPod.
Right.
and I'm going to create that.
That's kind of like, if you go back, funny enough, when I was going back and listening to those dorm room songs, I was finding like all these old emails that I would send to all these writers, and the subject lines were insane.
Yeah.
Like what?
They were just like,
open this up or I'll kill you.
Like the future is inside. Don't fuck up. Yeah, like, yeah, just, yeah, insane.
Yeah. I would delete that,
yeah,
so quick.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like insane shit where I'm like, obviously they didn't open this, bro. Like, you sound like an asshole. Like, what are you doing? But it's like, it was that same kind of thing where I felt like it was such a guarantee that I had good enough music, then like, y'all are just all sleeping, y'all are all wrong. I mean, a lot of it, I guess I was right because they ended up coming around. But yeah, my approach was rough.
Did you ever question, like, what was taking so long or any of that? Like, was it?
Yeah. Dorm room songs is called Way Too Long.
Mm-hmm.
And it was literally saying, this is taking way too long.
Yeah.
And I remember listening back to that one like a week or 2 weeks ago, and I'm like, this kid had no fucking clue. Like, you thought it was taking way too long?
Yeah.
In 2010?
Right? Yeah.
Like, I didn't get any sort of anything till like end of 2015, 2016. And I think that if that kid would have known that it was going to take 5 or 6 more years, I don't know.
Right.
If he would have kept going.
Oh my God.
I kept going because I thought it was tomorrow.
Yeah.
I thought any day now, Kanye's gonna call me.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not even how it works.
But I'm talking about questioning like the things that you're doing as opposed to the process itself.
No, that's the thing. I had this insane delusional confidence in myself that everything I was doing was right.
Mm-hmm.
My songs were right. My verses were perfect. Every word I picked was perfect. The beat, the everything, the approach. I was an asshole. Like, I still have the qualities, but it's like, I had an explanation for everything I was doing.
Yeah.
I could justify everything. This is why I sent that subject line. This is why I hit you up on Twitter like this. I thought everything I was doing was right.
Did you have any way to make income outside of your music at that point?
I was working at, I worked at Off-Broadway Shoe Warehouse. I worked as a busboy at a couple different places.
But were you the best busboy?
No. 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 But see, like, I didn't even take pride in that.
Yeah, right.
So I didn't give a shit.
So you... No, because you were like, this is all temporary. Like, I'm going to make it doing this thing.
Right. Like, I was just doing that to just, like, appease my parents and put some money in my pocket.
Yeah. And also in their pockets.
Yeah. Well, no. At that time, they were good.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, they were good. It was not really until I was about 22. That it got fucked up. But it was fucked up for like a year or two until I found out.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you ever have that point around that age where your friends are, I don't know, getting like a job where they got to dress up and they got to go in and work a 9-to-5 or whatever, and are you like, man, they don't see the work that I put in. They don't hear what I'm doing and see the seeds of potential.
Yeah.
And like, do I have to acclimate and fall into line?
Sure.
Yeah.
You know what happened was I cut off everyone. Like, once I left school, which was top of 2011, so like it was my second semester of freshman year, it was just me and Bugis in his basement, and like I just cut off everyone just because I knew so wholeheartedly what I wanted to do, and I was so focused on it and so driven that like if you were not part of that, then I'm not talking to you, I'm not hanging out with you. Like, deleted my Facebook. Like, I didn't even give a fuck what anyone else was doing. I really didn't.
Chip on your shoulder was so big.
And I had to prove to myself that I was doing the right thing. So I was just I was really locked in, like really lasered in on just going to Boogies' every day, making songs every day. I was just locked in.
What's crazy is I have so many questions for Boogies right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a really important part of my journey is that we did this together.
Together till today as
well. Today.
He's on the new album.
100%.
Like, love that.
100%. Yeah, I mean, it's like Boogies put me on to the books that really shaped my whole like mental artillery.
Which
like,
were?
The Magic Ladder to Success, which is Napoleon Hill, and 7 Spiritual Laws, Deepak Chopra. But that,
so self-help books.
Yeah, but that Napoleon Hill book really, like, and I'm sure Boogies would agree, really like changed our lives at 17, 18. And we were the type of people who, once we believe it, we really, really believe it and we really apply it. And like, I'm sold, I'm bought in. And so we were living by that book. That was like a Bible for us. So, yeah.
So you create albums or mixtapes or projects, right?
Yeah.
what was it about them that tied everything together? Or was it just really your 10 best songs?
That's really what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really just, and it's still to this day, I still just call my album titles based off of the time period. I don't really.
You're just like Adele.
Is that Adele?
Well, yeah, Adele, Adele.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so easy too. That's such a great, what a good idea.
Yeah, but then she stopped doing it.
Well,
did she? What was her last album called?
Her 25? Age. And then now she's like doing, she said she's going to come off of that.
Oh, really?
She needs to drop an album called 30 or 30 or whatever she is.
Yeah. Do you remember when 808s and Heartbreak came out? It was like, what the fuck like happened? No, but it was like, we had this whole pattern here. Like, you
right.
know, and everything was going
deviation.
In order. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was amazing though.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, even to this day, mine are always just time periods. I don't really do the like concept albums in the sense of like, I'm trying to tell y'all a story. Like the story I'm trying to tell is really just, I'm trying to just make real life music about my life and hope that it, you know, you're probably going through it too and hope that works. I'm sure at some point I'll stop talking about myself, but until then I'll be selfish.
I mean, it's an interview.
No, while we're here, I'm going to talk about myself.
I was like, we can talk about Adele for another hour, but like, you know, I don't know.
So down.
Yeah. Well, what's the point where you're just like, this is more than just, you know, me putting in the work. I'm a professional now. Is it the Belgium trip or is it something before that?
I don't
even
know if I feel like that now. I don't know.
Really?
I feel like I've been 17 for 10 years, which is probably a bad thing. Well, I probably need therapy.
Just
it's like a suspended adolescence because I've just been living such a like fantasy make-believe life. I hardly did societal normal things. The most normal thing I did was just go to college.
Right.
But then once I was done with that, I was living a very irregular life.
Well, also, I mean, like when you're so driven, then you don't really have hobbies outside of that.
That like my hobby was music.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask that. Yeah. You own a home.
Yeah.
You have, you know, a record contract.
Yeah, no, on paper, it's
there are professional
very, like,
things, adult stuff.
And weird. Yeah, but
it doesn't feel like that.
No, because I just
you're not
I
like
think,
that's my pool.
No, like I try to
that's
like
my
that's,
staircase.
That's the thing is like when I walk around my house, sometimes I try to say that out loud to make it like hit more, and it might hit for like a second. I'm like, wow, this is crazy. Look at my pool. But I'm like, okay. I think what it is too is that I have all the same people around me.
Right.
So it never felt like. Man, I remember back then kicking it with that. Like 10 years ago, I was hanging out with the people in this room.
Yeah, but then that shows the growth together.
Yeah.
I think that's the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
When, and this is like skipping far ahead and we'll come back, but like when Joe Budden came over.
Yeah.
How did you show him around your house?
I just took him on a tour of the. I didn't show him my bedroom.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, it's not the cribs. Like, this is where the magic happens.
Yeah. But, like, yeah, no, I walked. My pool wasn't done yet. My backyard wasn't done yet. But
Eric, listen to this guy talking about his pool.
I know. Yeah. No. So much pool talk.
I know. I wish it was done because it's really great. But, yeah, I just showed him, like, the basement and, you know, the studio. I have a salt cave, like a movie theater. I don't know.
That's dope.
Around. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's really sick. But it also just feels like. I don't know. I think because I'm so not used to it that it sometimes feels like a hotel, like you're staying there.
Does this mean that there's another level to what adulthood means that you feel you haven't hit yet?
I feel like I haven't, and I feel like it's starting to happen this year. Like I've just started like forgiving myself for past things and past approaches, and I'm starting to like try and. You realize like when you get older and you start noticing certain qualities in yourself that were in your parents that you didn't like about your parents.
Yeah.
And you're like, fuck, I'm doing the same shit. And so I'm starting to like self-reflect like that, like my short temper and, you know, my quick to just shit on people and snap and fucking be abrasive. Like, that's all my dad. My dad gave me all great qualities too, but, you know, certain things, like, I don't know, I've just been doing a lot of self-reflecting. So I don't know what's next, but I definitely feel like it's something.
So, like, last night when we went to your listening, you opened it up by saying that you were in a really good space.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean? Because you're now in the self-reflective sort of zone. And
it's the self-forgiveness thing. It's like, I forgive myself for getting into a bad space. I forgive myself for, like, I just forgive myself. So, like, yeah, I'm in a great place.
And not to, like, delve too much into it, because I think you're in a different place than you were, but, like, when you were saying a lot of things that got a lot of headlines.
Yeah.
Would you ruminate on that? Like when the reaction would come in and it would be like a very negative thing. Would you be like, oh man, I should have approached that in a different way? Or was it just like, no, like I believe what I said.
Yeah, no, I always believed what I said. I didn't like how people would twist the things and like misinterpret. I'm like, man, y'all don't like, that's not what I meant, you know, but that's the thing. I forgive myself and I forgive others for like, you know, maybe I could have said things differently or whatever. I get it, you know, but It is what it is. I think that at the end of the day, if you, like, in 10 years, when you look back at all the crazy things I've said or whatever, it's like, you know, he was on the right side of the fence, probably. Like, he probably said it in a harsh way, but, you know, if you look at the meat of the message, it's kind of spot on, I think.
What is the point where you felt like things were really going very well, and you're, before you got signed, where you're just like, man, like, this, I can feel the momentum.
It was the end of 2015 going into 2016, because that's when my TuneCore went from, like, I watched it go from $600 in June of 2015 in that month to like $1,200 the next month, $2,004, and then December it made $8,000 or $4,000 or something, and then January 2016 it was $16,000, and then the next month it was $40,000 and it's $75,000.
What do you attribute that to?
Yeah,
it was the onslaught of music. So what it was is I had this huge catalog out, but nothing had popped off yet, but a huge catalog. So once I had like Losing Control and What They Want pop off, those songs basically put everyone else onto the catalog.
Yeah,
and everything started making money. So that was it. It was just the snowball. You as an artist, you need songs to put the world onto the rest of your catalog.
Right. Yeah. Right. You know? Yo, how blessed are you to be in this time where streaming is there and people can just like go down the page and find your catalog
instead of having to go to Coconuts or Sam Goody or whatever and be like,
but like legitimately you could have a song from like 3 years ago, 4 years ago that someone is like, oh, I fuck with that, and I can sync this to a song and that could just rocket up the charts, and 100%. You're like, oh, I didn't even think that that was the one.
No, I mean, like, you look at Lizzo time. Right, like,
that's
Lizzo's
a perfect example.
Or even like LMA.
That's Losing Control too, because Losing Control came out 2015 and didn't get a plaque until 2017. Like, 2017 is when it got taken to radio.
Yeah.
And shit like that. So it's nuts. Streaming is beautiful. I think what's going to end up happening, they're going to keep changing the rates.
Yeah,
and I know it's not going to be retroactive, so I'm just going to get pissed. Like, okay, well, can you cut me a check for
Are you ever surprised when people are just like, yo, I really fuck with that song? And you're like,
It's funny. Like, as an artist, sometimes you almost get insulted. people are like, yo, my favorite song. And they'll name like my first mixtape ever at 19. I'm like, I fucking hate you.
Yeah.
But you're also like, you're amazing.
But also like, that person's going through something now.
Yeah.
And it's then really, like, later they might like identify with other stuff that you 100%. Put out. You know?
Yeah. I think music is like, as far as enjoying it, it's very reflective. Like, your favorite song is very reflective of where you're at. You know, like, my favorite Drake album is largely due to where I was when I was listening to it.
Yeah.
Same with, like, my favorite J. Cole album is The Warm Up. But that's because I was, not only do I think it's musically the best, but I was 17.
Yeah.
I was just starting to, like, really try and figure out what I wanted to do. And, you know, it just came at a perfect time. You know,
it also works for, like, SNL casts.
Yeah.
Your favorite SNL cast is like when you were 13 or 15 or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Everything I say is interesting. Like, it's
no,
it's wild.
Yeah. We have that in common.
Yeah. Start talking about your pool, Jeff.
Yeah.
Now.
What is...
It's very small and dirty.
Not saying this new album.
Yeah.
What's your favorite Russ album or project?
Not saying this new one. There's Really a Wolf.
Why?
Because it was just like all of the best songs on my computer on one album. It was a playlist, you know? It wasn't like, there was no story. There was really no story or cohesiveness. It was just like, put the hardest songs on your computer on the album. And that was cool. Like, I'm glad, like, I wanted to do that for the first album and prove that I could do everything myself and it be successful and get a plaque and all the, you know, whatever. But now moving forward, it's like, nah, I'm really focused on trying to make the best album. If that means I got to go work with this guy and da 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 da, I'm down.
Yeah. So Columbia Records comes into your life how?
So 2016, the songs like Losing Control and What They Want specifically start going nuts.
Where were they going nuts?
In my opinion, What They Want started going nuts because it was getting posted in the background of all these sports highlights on Instagram. That's why I kept seeing it. I kept noticing, like, this is insane. What They Want went crazy first before Losing Control. And then I put out the video, and the video did really well on YouTube. And then I put, like, shortly after I put out the video for What They Want, I put out the video for Losing Control. And then that started to go crazy. So then,
but what's crazy for you at that time? Because, like, you know, at a certain point, it was like 200 views means a lot to
you. Yeah, I think 1 million views.
That's a little bit more than 200.
Yeah, it was like, it's like, oh shit, this is nuts.
Yeah.
You know? And at that time, I was doing like South by Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like different industry people are starting to call. Like that's when I, around the time I met my manager. And
yep. Shouts to Milan. Yeah, yep. Yep.
And he's introducing me to Kara Lewis.
Yep.
And then, you know.
Did you know anything about Kara, by the way?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
I made him get me Kara Lewis.
Well, what did you know about Kara before?
I just knew she was the GOAT. She
See, that's cool too. That's the same thing with like John, right? Where it's just like, no, I want to work with the best people. So yeah. Let me go for this legend and this legend and right. This legend. And yeah.
100%. So yeah. Then I got with Kara, and then she got me with my international booking agent. So the first tour I ever actually went on was in 2016, like April, May, called the Manifest Tour, and it was a Europe tour. And so that was cool because I had never like toured before, and the first one was international.
Yeah, like I've been to Belgium. It's old hat. It's like, yeah.
Belgium was the biggest show on that tour by like a landslide.
Because you had that, you know, that
right.
audience
so
there.
Yeah,
shout out to Nick Everett.
Yeah.
Right. So I remember the Belgium show on that tour, Columbia's people flew out to see it. And then the London show on that tour, RCA's people flew out to see it. So I was like,
they flew all the way over there
to come see the show.
And wow. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Did you put on a better show because of it?
I don't remember. I hope I did.
Did you feel like more was on the line because they were there?
I'm trying to remember my headspace. I think I was just gassed that I was doing shows. I was like, I don't really give a fuck who y'all are.
Okay. Yeah. So,
because I was actually very anti-label.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm going to say because you're making all that TuneCore money.
Yeah, so I kind of...
You don't have to pay anybody.
Right. So I was like, I was very anti-label. I didn't really give a fuck what they were talking about. I remember getting phone calls from labels in Columbia when I was up in New York doing stuff, and I'm just like on the phone, like not listening at all because I was just like, I don't have any interest in fucking with the label.
Yeah. Also, but how old were you?
23.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Prime, not giving a fuck time.
Prime asshole. Yeah. perfect right amount of everything. So that was happening, and then I started looking around at like the rap game and like, you know, people I looked up to, and I was like, man, especially the radio, I was like, everyone on the radio is with a label. It's like, I think I have to level the playing field.
Yeah.
So that's really, that was the whole thing. Like, I was the
label.
Why did radio
matter to you?
Because I felt like, especially at that time too, like Apple Music wasn't even, I think it had just come out. It wasn't a thing. Spotify playlisting wasn't even a thing. So radio still really moved the needle, and it still does. But like, you know, I just, in my head, the perception of it, of like, oh, you're on the radio, that's what makes it real, you know? And so I just wanted to make sure that what every other artist had, I had too. You know, I had the machine behind me and whatever. So, after, you know, I got back from that tour, then I did like a 6-city U.S. tour in the summertime.
Did Columbia come to that?
They were at the Billings, Montana show.
Wow.
Very first show.
So weird.
I know, they'll
my family's like, very scattered.
Yeah.
Yeah, no,
and they're down to go anywhere.
No, but they're all Columbia execs, and they all go to, you know, like weird cities.
Yeah, it is bizarre when you think about it. Yeah, so
like they could just go to New York.
Maybe they'd be like, well, New York is so easy, you know, because people are going to come out. Maybe they're like, who's going to go to Billings, Montana?
Were they at the... We didn't do a New York show on that run, did we? That's crazy.
I went to your New York show. I mean, Sarah Mary Cunningham brought me to
one. So you were already signed?
Yeah, you were already signed.
At like Webster Hall?
No, I don't remember where it was. It was like...
The like double decker?
No, because it was like low ceiling. I don't remember.
So maybe...
Oh, it's Webster Hall.
It had to be Webster. Downstairs?
Downstairs.
The Marlin Room or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I remember like... I didn't know any of your music,
yeah.
But I was just like, wow, like what a devoted fan base.
Yeah, they're the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just feel like still, it's one of those things that, especially now with the hate, it makes them want to be so much more like, well, fuck y'all for real then. We really love them, you know? But yeah, so like June or July of 2016, it's on my Instagram somewhere, but it's when I partnered with Columbia.
And were you afraid of what a partnership with a big building would mean? That it would change anything that you built on your own?
Because was that something that you, like, as soon as it happened, you told people, or did you, like, keep it on the low for a little while?
No, as soon as it happened. I posted the video that day.
Oh, yeah, you were definitely looking for that, except, like, that validation
like,
of just, like...
Because that was a real thing to me. That, like, helped make it real.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you got a deal.
Yeah.
You know? And I was proud of it. It was a fucking multi-million-dollar deal. Like, I became a millionaire, like... You know,
all and not to mention, aside from the money, but like you are on the level of your heroes now.
Yeah,
and
right.
I'm so one like, of you. We're in this exclusive club.
I'm in the built like in the label with, you know, Beyonce's here and Adele and Bob Dylan and Pharrell. So, you know, it was sick.
Did that change you at all?
No, it didn't change the music. It didn't really...
No, I mean, like, you. Like, did that... Like,
probably.
Getting that thing that you wanted.
Yeah.
And, like, you've now reached this thing.
Yeah. I think... I mean, it must have. It had to. I'm just trying to think now, how did it?
Were you afraid of, like, you know, putting that first project out?
No. I was really excited. I was really excited because I felt like, okay, finally now it's time to, like, really do the real thing, which is the album. The whole me putting out a song every week was a means to an end. It was like, I'm doing this so that I can put out an album.
Yeah, so I don't have to do this anymore.
Right, so I was like, I was excited to get to that point. And then I knew musically nothing was going to change because the conversations that I have with all the labels, like, y'all are walking into an already fully functioning thing. Like, I have a booking agent. I'm already doing shows.
You have a Bugis.
Y'all don't. Yeah. And a huge element also, like, in fucking April of 2016 or March, Kylie Jenner was posting.
Yeah, she had your song in the background.
Yeah, and, like, Losing Control, and she posted Pull the Trigger. And
Who was the friend or person who was just like, yo,
at that time,
tune in?
At that time, I didn't know. I was, like, I was as shocked as everyone else was. I was like,
no, I'm saying, who told you? Who was, like, who told hit you? Me? Yeah. Like, yo, check Kylie's shit.
I think the fans were tagging me. I was getting tagged in my Instagram.
You're like, what is this?
I'm like, there's no way. Like, and at that time, it was Snapchat. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
She was showing love on Snapchat, which I put in a song.
But that's crazy.
Yeah. And that was like, you know, they used to do, I remember Genius did like a article back then on like song she A&R'd.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like Location by Khalid was one of them that she posted around the same time as Losing Control. So that made a huge difference.
Yeah. I mean, we do live in that age now where like LeBron's like social media can launch someone.
Especially when you're really small, because like Kylie was playing Nighttime the other week, which is still fucking insane. I'm still going to get geeked over because it's fire. You're Kylie Jenner.
Yeah.
But
have you met her yet?
No. But it doesn't, I don't think it moves the needle as much as it did when I was smaller because you're going from such anonymity. Yep. To like the biggest person in the world posting you, so it really like you could really almost feel an overnight thing, kind of.
Oh, skipping ahead again.
Yeah.
When Rihanna puts you on social media,
that you felt the that was fucked. That was insane.
Had you met her?
No, still haven't. Never talked to her.
And so,
same thing. That was fans tagging me. I was getting a manicure with my mom.
Wait, so you? Well, I guess someone holds your phone or something. Yeah. But you look at it.
Yeah, while I was getting this hand done.
Yeah. And you look at it, you like, yo, mom, like.
I saw someone left a comment and they spelled like her name wrong, and it was just like Rihanna like this, and I was like, do they mean Rihanna? I'm like, there's no way. And so I go to Rihanna's profile and see that she's following me now, and I was like, what? It's like,
how do you not drop it into that, like,
I only,
you know,
had the snippet out. So then I go through my likes and I'm like, oh, she liked the snippet. And so then the song came out that night, and then she instantly posted her video, and I was like, this is fucking insane. Like,
that's amazing.
Yeah, I was screaming in my house for a good 30 minutes straight. I sent all of my friends like voice memos of just.
So you do still get like excited about everything.
What?
Yeah.
Wait. Well, that's Rihanna.
What do you
Well, I mean, yeah. But
what do you hit her?
I still get very excited.
Yeah. What do you hit her with? Like, say thanks?
Yeah, I just was like, hi. You're amazing. This is awesome. Thank you.
Did she respond?
No.
Oh, well, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah. That's fine.
It's great. She doesn't have to. She's Rihanna.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay.
But she doesn't do that if Bia is not on the song. That's why it's like, I'm super grateful for Bia. And I didn't even know that Bia had like a connection with her, like whatever.
Yeah.
I just thought Bia was dope. And we had made that song like 9 months prior. So that's why it's just important to like, you know, it's funny how I do a whole album with no features and whatever. And then the one that goes fucking nuts is
the one with the feature.
Well, but it makes sense. Collaborating yields the best shit.
It is pretty amazing. I know you got a lot of shit for being like, yo, I record, I write, I produce, I do all this stuff. But if you do take a step back and you're talking about this like 10 years later type of thing, it's like, yeah, that is pretty significant.
It is impressive.
It is.
It's period. It's just that I was saying it earlier today too, and I understand that. It's just going to take time, you know? Like, you have to be dope for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, cool, you did it once, bro. Get over it. You know, we don't believe you. It's always like that. If someone has a good rookie season, you have to see them be good in their second year and third year and fourth year before you're like, all right, maybe you're actually, like, really good.
Right.
You sound like a totally different person than I thought you would be.
Yeah, good.
Did somebody, like, put you in your place in, like, a different way?
Like, I think, like, I put myself in my place. Yeah. I started, like, watching old interviews, and I was like, I'm just like, I need to fucking relax. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was so much of like trying to prove which, like, that's part of the forgiveness thing. Like, I forgive myself for going so hard trying to prove and, like, overcompensate. Like, no, I am good enough, and I'm selling 2,000 tickets. What the fuck are y'all doing? And did it. Like, I get it, because my spot wasn't solidified in my head. Like, I wasn't super secure with where I was at in the game,
yeah,
in the realm of the thing, because you just got on. Like, you just blew up. You don't know if you're going to really be here. Of course, I had all the confidence in the world, but deep down, it was clearly still, like, but do you believe you're going to be here? Because why are you acting like this?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, if you
so
if you
I forgive can, myself
if you that. Do condense your story and you say, like, all right, well, they doubted and they doubted and they doubted, and it's just like, I didn't do this in time, and I felt this pressure to get something done. It's like, yeah, you would react in a certain way.
Yeah, and I was just, and, you know, a lot of it too came from, like, I thought what I was doing was really impressive, and I thought that it wasn't getting talked about enough.
Right.
So then what do you do to combat that? I'll talk about it all
yeah.
the time.
Yeah.
You know what
Which
I mean?
Which I think is something that we do a lot.
Oh, my
but
God.
Like, you know.
We're self-made. We're 12 years into a career where we've done everything ourselves.
It's amazing.
We've had certain people, you know, managers or agents or whatever, but they didn't do shit
right.
for us, so it fell on our shoulders. And
sure.
it's like, you do...
Big up yourself.
Amazing things. Okay, so I asked this yesterday on Twitter. I was just like, yo, put a poll out or whatever. Mm-hmm. I was like, how do we, you know, in 2020 promote the stuff that we do? Is it to be humble, or is it to be loud?
Yeah, I think loud is always great.
Yeah. I'm more of like the... I like to, like, hope that other people will, like, just recognize it. But it's like, nobody's going to recognize it if you are that humble person.
Right. That's
so it's
the,
just like,
that's
you know.
The thing. If you wait around for, like, them to crown you,
right.
you'll miss your moment.
Yeah.
No one will. So, and that's what it was for me. Like, I was already so conditioned like that. Like, I had done all these mixtapes and all these songs that no one gave a fuck about and emailed all these bloggers and writers that no one gave a fuck about. It wasn't hitting me back. So I was already coming into this shit pissed off, like, chip on my shoulder, like, ha-ha. Fuck you, I told you. So it was a lot of, like, that energy, which is, like, cool. But now that I've, like, been here for a couple years, which is not a long time, but third album's a real thing. And I'm like, okay, I had a crazy conversation with John Mayer, which, like, anyone who's had the pleasure of talking to him, he's like Yoda. He's, like, the smartest person ever. And he texts so fast. And it'll be these, like, insanely huge... genius paragraphs that I'm like, do you just have these, like,
you just copy and paste
thing, right? Because how are you writing such profound shit?
Yeah,
but he's just a genius. And I told him, like, I asked him, how do you, like, transition, like, to, like, because I still felt, and I still do at times, but, like, I had a foot in the life before this and a foot in this life, not, like, you know, actual reality, but mentally, like, I didn't feel fully here. And he was just, he all he said was just, take your coat off. Hmm. Take your jacket off. It was either jacket
He really
off.
Is like Yoda.
Yeah.
Like,
it was
these, like,
but like
weird,
you,
like, Buddhist koans.
I still use that. I've been using it all day. And, like, ever since then, it's just, like, that's what it took for me. It was, okay, take your coat off. Like,
you know what the best
so
thing
profound.
Would be? If he didn't even mean it to be, like, a deep thing.
And he's like, literally, it's hot.
Yeah, it was like an autocorrect.
Yeah. He, like, meant to send it to somebody else. Right, take your coat off.
He's like, whoops, I guess it worked for you. Run with it. Yeah. No, but it was really profound, and it, like, it helped a lot. And I used to have conversations with him when it was, like, when all the, like, negativity was happening, and I was like, how do you just not respond to it? Like, people are assassinating my character, and he just was like, you know, I think you need to move the goalposts on what you think is assassination of your character. Just, like, all these really profound things.
Yeah, it would have been amazing if he was also, that time, take off your coat, and you're just like, man,
yeah,
this guy's got something for everything.
I know.
It's
no,
the one thing, yeah.
He's the best.
But
the best.
But the truth of the matter is, you did start to collaborate with other people. And
yeah.
Was that to get out of your comfort zone? Was
no,
it to, like,
I
answer the people
the,
who were...
No, I always wanted to, but people don't, like, fans and people on the outside looking in, they just assume that, like, once you get a certain number of followers, just, like, call Drake.
Right.
Get him on
the
song.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't
DM Rihanna,
anyone.
Right, yeah.
Like, even on my first album, I knew nobody. Like, nobody knew me. Like, I didn't know how to get a hold of Boy Wonder. I didn't know how to get a hold of Scott Storch or even Bia or, like, anyone.
Yeah.
Literally anyone. So that's why the album didn't have any features.
Yeah. So once you do link up with them, what is that experience sitting in a studio with Scott Storch like?
Insane.
Yeah.
Really, like, really, on the way there, I was super nervous because I wanted to, like... I was worried. At first, I was worried that I was like, man, I hope he plays something that inspires me. Because what if, like, it's like the reason why I started making beats. What if I'm sitting there and I'm like, man, I don't, like, I'm not feeling anything. And then I was like, I hope I can come up with something that's dope. Like, you know, this is like everything right now to me.
Sure.
You don't want to like, there's times creatively where you're just, you,
yeah,
you're it just, doesn't, right. yeah. It just mm-hmm. doesn't work. And so I was like, fuck, I'm just praying it's not one of those days. But every time I've been with him, we've always made something insane.
So we're very good friends with the Locks, and they recently worked with Scott as well.
Yeah.
And they said that it was so much conversation ahead of time.
Yeah.
That was the most important construction to whatever they would do, you know, later on that afternoon.
Oh, there was no conversation with me and Scott at first.
It's just him sitting at the keyboard?
Well, like we walk in, he comes over, says, what's up? You know, super nice. Super, you know, just everything great, but like we didn't have some crazy huge conversation.
Right.
He was just like, "What do you?" He's always like, "What do you want to make?"
And a song.
I remember the first thing I told him was, "Oh no!" The first thing he played me was a song called that I put out called Maybe, and it was like "Cry Me a River." That's what I was like looking for, and he was like, "This is better than that." I was like, fire. And then I remember the second time I saw him, I was like, I want to make some shit like Me, Myself, and I.
Wow.
And then he played Wife You Up, which is now gold. So, like, he's just a maniac. Like, if you ask him to do anything, he's like, okay, one second. It's just like, it's so bizarre.
Have you told him that you had Scott Storch drums?
Have I told him that? I'm sure I have. I'm sure I have.
Yeah. What was your first time meeting Illmind like?
That was last night. Or two nights ago? When were we in the
studio? Wait, what?
Yeah, two nights ago. I met him for the
first
time.
You had never met before?
No. Internet, DMs, texts, beats, that was, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, met him two nights. He's awesome.
Wait, yes. So previously...
Yeah, he's awesome.
So previously when he sent you music for this album...
Yeah.
You did not know him in real life?
No.
And he sent you a finished product, essentially?
Yeah, he would just send me beat packs.
And you're like, oh, I like this one.
Yeah.
And so then...
We have like 20 songs together.
Legitimately, the stuff that you did two nights ago...
Yeah.
Is...
Really great. Really great. And I told him, I was like, please do not hold me to this standard, because I don't ever like crank out two really good songs. Like, yo, if I do two songs in a night, one of them is like maybe not going out, or like maybe, I don't know, it's not that great. It's probably great, but
this is so crazy. Yeah. You're unlike anything I thought you'd be.
Good. Yeah, I could tell. You probably thought I was just gonna come in here.
Well, no, I wanted to have like an actual conversation. Like, my thing was that every conversation that I've seen with you has always been
very abrasive.
Well, it opens up with, why do people hate you? Or you said this thing and tell me why. Right. And so I was like, okay, I don't know anything about your personal story.
Yeah.
And I was just like, all right, let's just like have like an honest conversation and like, you know, trace over the arc of your thing. And then that'll get you like a humanized thing.
Because what separates us, we like to think, look, you're coming to our apartment.
Yeah.
You're sitting down. We want to know legitimately about your life. And everybody has an inspirational path and journey, and it is interesting to hear that. No one has covered that with you. We wanted to hear your story.
And there have been parts of your story that have been. So, like, the Joe Budden thing, I watched the first probably 20 minutes or so.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to trace over the exact thing that he did. But but for 20 minutes, in that, you talk about your relationship with your father and how that all worked. And so I was like, that's fascinating, and I want to get into all of that.
Cool.
Yeah. So... At this point in your life, do you feel like the music matches up with where your head is at as a human?
I feel like, you know how when you get booked for things in advance, and so when you actually end up doing the show, you're worth more?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how music is, because the album coming out right now is not the most up-to-date version of me. It would be the songs I made two nights ago.
Right.
Yeah. You know? So, but yeah, musically, it's all like, it's pretty on par. But the album is amazing. The album is in a good space.
We heard it last night.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming.
No. Yeah. Rick Ross.
Yes.
Wild.
Yeah. He went crazy too.
Rapping in the same cadence as you.
Yeah, he's awesome.
That's amazing.
He's awesome.
Benny the Butcher.
Benny the Butcher.
Yeah.
I mean... Crazy. How did these reach outs go?
How did we first link with Ross? It was, you know what? It was Bel Air. You know Brett, who like owns Bel Air. What's Brett's last name? Brett Barish.
We know of him.
Right.
We know a couple other people below.
So I did.
We know Rick Ross.
So this was
that's true.
This is actually a really cool story. So I did this interview with Brett and Bel Air, and he's like, if you meet him, he's the nicest, greatest human ever. Like, just so like, oh, anything you need, like, just so welcoming and just warm and amazing. And so after the interview, he's like, man, anything you need, just ask. And I'm the type of person, if you tell me that, I'm asking right then for the crazier shit. I was like, I need Rick Ross and Nipsey on a song. Because he had a good relationship with Nipsey.
Yeah.
And he was like, done. 2 weeks later, I got, not even, like a week later, I got a verse back from Ross. And then, like, you know, we were going with Nipsey, and then Nipsey was on tour, and I talked to Nipsey. He was like, I'm going to get it to you, da-da-da-da. And it just didn't end up working out. But, yeah,
that was okay. How
that happened.
Where do you listen to that Ross verse?
That the first one that I got sent was in my mom's house.
Like on speakers or your headphones?
No, on my phone.
Yeah.
On my phone, and I was just fucking screaming.
Like, because it's you.
Yeah.
Like,
that's, I will say, that's one of those moments where I felt like a professional rapper.
Yeah.
I was like, wait a second, this is Rick. And it was over one of my beats.
Yeah.
Like, this new one is over a Boy Wonder beat. So, like, the first one was over one of my beats. I was like, oh, shit. And that beat I had made in a hotel room in Minnesota a year prior. And I had said in the hotel room, I'm going to get Ross on this. Like, this sounds like a Ross beat. And a year later, I got him on it. So I was like, this is fucked. This is nuts.
Do you put things into the universe for them to happen?
Absolutely.
What else have you put out there that you can talk about that you're like, oh, that's definitely on the way?
I feel like at some point me and Kanye are going to make something. I feel like at some point me and Drake are going to make something. I'm just like the biggest Drake fan
ever. Was he like one of the cutouts in your...
100%. Yeah.
I make it sound like a voodoo doll sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, I did that, so I gave you that layup. Yeah. That's partly due to me.
How did you get Boogus on the project?
I had my people hit his people.
Yeah,
and then,
yeah sure.
And then
yeah.
a year later, yeah. finally.
Yeah. Manifested it. Yeah. Benny the Butcher was a cool one, too, because I've just been a huge fan of him. And, like, you know, I listen to his music and just... I'm sitting there thinking, like, all right, well, there's no way he fucks with me. You know, like, that's what I'm thinking. Just, like, those worlds probably don't mesh musically. But I was like, fuck it. Let me show love and reach out and just be, like, you know, it'd be an honor to work with you.
Yeah.
And he's like, man, let's run it. I fuck with you. Da-da-da-da. He sent me a verse back ASAP.
The reality of the effectiveness of reaching out or having something good to say and concise... And the results is like 100%.
Do you guys get, like, in your world, do you feel, like, have you guys had those moments where you're like, man, if I didn't even reach out to this person, I wouldn't have even known that they fuck with me? Because, like, I feel like all of us, we sit around and wait for someone to hit us up. That's what I do, because I'm just a dickhead. Like, it's like, you know, like, I don't want to reach out, but I've gotten rid of that. Now I'm the first one to hit you up.
Yeah.
But there's been so many people that, like, I've reached out to, like, T-Minus.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I reached out the other week and just like, yo, you're fucking amazing. And he was like, man, I'm a big fan. Let's work. And then boom, now me and him have four songs.
Yeah.
There have been times that I think that we are very proactive in reaching out
to people. Do you guys hit people first?
Yeah.
Like, yes.
You want to know what the surprising stuff was?
I was surprised that you've hit us up or, like, your people hit us up.
Yeah. No, we've been trying to do this.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I had no idea either.
Well, it's been, like, on the radar. We just couldn't, like, timing and whatever. That's dope. But it's definitely been.
I appreciate that.
Very glad that it happened.
Yeah.
I'll say this. I was surprised. So, again, long career. We've done a lot of different things, right? We used to do these red carpet interviews for MTV.
Okay.
Which were so different. We did the AKAs. We did the gunshots. All that, right? Yeah. And everybody was fucking with us. J. Cole, Rocky, Ross, like, everybody. Right. So many times, Miguel... Currency. I mean, on down the list, people would be like, Jadakiss, like, everybody would be like, you guys do music too? And we're like, we actually do. And they're like, can we get on that? Because...
You guys do music?
Yeah, we do music. We did a mixtape with DJ Drama. We performed at Bonnaroo. We've done some cool stuff. Yeah.
What the entire fuck just happened?
We have an album. Oh, Bun B's rap with us. Freeway, Mano, Lil Jon. Like, the
what
list goes on.
What is happening right now?
We have a song with Currency and Smoke Dizza called Sugar High. There's a lot of stuff.
Currency and Smoke Dizza used to be my shit.
They still are. Yeah. But it's the fact that, like, people were like, yo, you do something different.
That's crazy.
That I really fuck with, right? And at that point, too, we had this,
What do you guys go by?
It's the Real.
That's
everything. Yeah. The podcast that's is a waste hard. Of time with It's the Real. We're It's the Real. We've done sketches. So 3.5 years every Monday. Talk about, like, consistency and quality. And people fucked with us because of that.
Yeah, because we're constantly feeding.
Max B wanted to be in a video and was in a video.
This is amazing.
Cameron was in a video.
This is so impressive.
Like, all these people. Yeah. But anyway, it meant a lot that people were just, like, proactive on their end. And it's just like, oh, when you get... like your Ross verse, yeah. when we got our Bun B verse for the first time for a song called Girls with the Dirty Souths,
yeah.
about those women who keep it au naturel, right? Right. by the way, did we shoot the video down in Houston where we were the three world's worst landscapers because we salute those women who let the bush grow?
Yes.
Yes. Anyway, it's a great, great music video. Shot by our friend Rex Arrow, who did all Mac Miller's videos.
Yes, Rex Arrow. Holy shit. I haven't heard that name. I remember seeing his... with his logo on the Mac Miller video.
He's the greatest. But for people to respect you and bless you with something, that you sit there and you listen to it, you're just like, but I'm me. Like,
right.
Like, we're us. Right. Like, we grew up 30 minutes north of New York City. Like, we listened to Hot 97. Like, like we grew up with like Big Pimpin', and now we're on a song with Bun,
right.
and you can never take that away from us.
100%.
That's the greatest feeling ever.
100%. Yep. And that's definitely a Ross moment for sure. And even when the Nipsey thing was so sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like we were really going to do that. And it was on a song called Last Forever, which is just like wild, you know, given all the things. But
yeah.
I remember when Snoop, that was like another moment.
But that one actually happened.
Like,
Yeah.
That was so random because he had posted something on his Instagram where like my song was in the background, but you couldn't tell if he like consciously did that or if he was like putting up a video of him and whatever the fuck music was in the background was whatever was in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then shortly after that, like a couple hours later, I just get a DM like, I love your music. Call me. From Snoop Dogg. I'm like,
did you call him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm like, how, like, what? And like, I remember the first time I called him also at my mom's house. The first time
you need to visit your mom more.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. No. First time I call Snoop Dogg and I hear his voice, it felt fake.
Oh, because
he sounds like Snoop Dogg.
Yeah,
because he's Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, so,
you hung up.
Yeah. By the way, really wild.
Yo, when you
like, what do you say to Snoop
when
Dogg?
You were getting your manicure done with your mom and the Rihanna thing? And you're like, is this real? Like, what's going on? When we were hosting. This is Grammys last year. A year ago, when it was in New York, whatever.
Okay.
And we were out at, we were hosting a club in Brooklyn, Szymanski's. And we're on the couches, whatever, we're doing whatever hosts have to do, right?
Right.
And someone hit us and was like, yo, the Roots played your shit on Jimmy Fallon. And we're just like,
no.
What? No.
Like, why? Like, there's zero reason for that to happen.
Yeah. And you're like breaking out like headphones in the club, like pressing, trying to like, are they really playing our shit? And then they did, and we were like, we got to leave. And so we jumped off the couches. We said sorry to, like, the people who were running
it. Literally exactly what I did. I ran out of the nail salon.
And we ran to the Roots were having their Roots, like, because they took over Gramercy for, like, a week or whatever and had their jam during Grammy week.
Yeah.
And we ran in there to go be able to say to, like, Questlove, like, thank you. He was like, oh, well, thanks for writing a song called Waco. And we're like, wonderful.
Because there was a TV show called Waco, and they played it for...
Yeah, for that, Waco. Oh,
for the walk-on music. Yeah.
Which is wild. Yeah. But it's those moments where it's just, like...
It makes it feel super real.
Yeah.
Or really not real.
Yeah, yeah, all at the same time.
Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah. No,
so,
yeah,
so you,
sure.
You've toured the world. Mm-hmm. As someone was saying to us last night at your thing, Russ doesn't get the credit for selling out the buildings he sells out.
Yeah.
That's got to feel very overwhelming and satisfying.
Yeah.
You're in a place now where you're on your third album. Mm-hmm. You're how old?
27.
Great age.
Yeah.
How satisfied are you?
I'm more satisfied than I was 6 months ago, you know, but I feel like I've always been scared to be content.
Oh, totally.
Because I just feel like it sleeps a little too close to complacency.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, is it important to you now for validation to get an award, to get a Grammy, to...
I've always wanted a Grammy. That was just something that I looked up to as a kid, and that my ego has to get that.
Yeah.
You know, and then I'll be okay. And like, then everything on my checklist is done. That is literally the last thing. Like, all I really wanted was a platinum debut album and like hits and to sell out Staples Center and and a Grammy and buy my mom a beach house.
So okay, done.
Yeah.
So you win a Grammy.
After I get a Grammy and sell out the Garden.
Oh, and I feel like now we're just like adding more things to this thing.
No, because I forgot I do want to do the Garden. Yeah. But then it's like, then at that point, everything is kind of just, oh, this is great. This is extra. You know? Like, if I end up being able to make a song with Kanye, that's crazy. Or, like, you know, shit like that would just be.
But it's nothing where you put, like, a time limit on things and say, like, well, I want to retire after I get a Grammy. Because then isn't it like, well, I want another Grammy?
Yeah, well, that's always what my dad used to tell me is, like, you know, you don't know how to be content. You're going to have 14 Grammys and be really pissed off you don't have 15, which is most likely true.
Yeah.
So, but let me get to 14.
You know. Did you watch the Grammys this year?
No.
Okay. Well, you know, Tyler, the Creator, you know, won for Best Rap Album. Yeah. And it's interesting to look at his journey when you're saying, like, I look back at my interviews. I remember also on Rap Fix when all those guys, Odd Future, were in the... And I felt so bad for Rob. I felt so bad because, all they wanted to do was disrupt things,
And they
right?
had Joey on... Remember, Joey Badass was the guest.
Yeah. Totally. On that. But, like... Yeah. You know, I'm sure that Tyler looks back at his stuff and he's like, oh, I'm grown. I'm a different person.
Yeah.
You know?
And that was Rob's first
I'm saying. But, like, to see his career arc is not dissimilar to yours, where it's like, no, I was young at the time.
Yeah.
People grow up. Now I am a grown-up.
It is
Believe
hard.
Believe it or not. It, pool it, and the whole thing. Yeah, you are an adult. Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. no, are but you, it's you know what it is? It's when you not grow up in front of the world, but like as we're saying, you are still growing up, even if you're 23 in front of the world, and now I'm 27, that is still more growing up. But when you do it in front of the world, they try and like keep you prisoner to whatever you said for you. Like, not, you're not allowed to change your mind. It's like, what?
Right.
It's insane. What if I change my mind though?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, I was looking at, I don't remember what I was going to say.
All right.
Yeah, it's fine. And, you know, we had, like, such a good conversation.
We did.
And just, like, right now, it's just like, you want to know what? Fuck it.
Absolutely.
It's okay to fuck up. Yeah, it's okay.
You do have this new album.
Yeah.
It comes out, by this time it has come out.
Right.
So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
What are you looking for this album to mean to your...
I just want my fans to fuck with it. That's it. Like, and they, I started...
I think they will.
I started getting into this game of, like, competition, which is really easy to do, especially because I'm super competitive. Like, you know, I played basketball all my life in high school, you know, but I learned that, like, it's really just competing against myself. Like, as far as the numbers go, as long as this album does more streams than Zoo, then I won because I beat myself.
Yeah.
Everything else is what the fuck ever, well, as far as numbers go.
Okay. What if it doesn't?
If it doesn't, then it's also kind of just like, but do y'all like it?
Yeah.
You know?
Like, I think that it's you know, it's whatever.
It's just, yeah, it's all kind of whatever. Like, but it's like, you know, I wanted to get away from trying to be like, but what did you do your first week?
Yeah, no, like,
you know?
Like, we had a conversation with Ari Lennox on here.
Amazing.
She's the best.
She is the
best.
She's
so good. And it's not the credit she deserves.
But we were talking about how she didn't like how certain projects of hers hadn't hit with certain audiences or something. And I was like, there's no, like, these days, there's no difference between good or bad. It's just, has it found its audience yet or not? And I say yet, because, like, you know,
you never know. It could take, like, a year for it to find it.
Exactly. And we were already talking about that with, like, the Lizzo stuff, with your stuff. Like, things can take 2 years, 3 years to catch on. And so, like, I hope that you have your pride in your work, and that's all that matters. Like, it's not the numbers. It's not. And by the way, I'm usually not the Gary Vee of this sort of dynamic, but I guess, like, right now I am.
Yeah.
So. But the numbers do matter to me, because I've just always been a number person. I'm glad that they don't matter so much in the space of comparing it to someone else's numbers.
Yeah.
But, like, I am competing against myself. But, like, at the end of the day, you're 100% right. Like, first and foremost, I'm proud of the music. You know, I think, fuck everything else, this is, like, me at my best musically. That's my opinion. Like, this is I feel like the growth skill wise between my first album and second album is not that crazy. It's like, I'm pretty much just about the same. This one is the one where I really creatively, like, went here.
But
for me,
if you look back, if you pull back, and you look at, because there's been lots of ups and downs, but if you look back, you started down here.
Yeah.
And you're way up here.
No, it's
and
crazy.
That
yeah.
is what should be important.
It is, for sure. No, when I went back and listened to those terrible dorm room songs, I'm like, I can't believe. And then I instantly, like, played my newest song I had made. I was like, holy fuck. Like, I didn't see this coming at all. Like,
yeah, you know? I don't have type drums anymore. I have actual drums.
Like, holy shit. It was like, I used to make beats, like, one finger like on the piano is just doing three notes. It's so bad. And like, yo, this is so hard. Like, delusional. But I needed that delusion. Everyone needs that delusion.
100,000%.
It's hard though, because certain things are not for everyone. So it's hard to tell people be delusional, because a lot of times it's like, okay, stop being delusional, because this is not for you.
Right.
Know? But
for sure. Well, listen, Russ, I'm thrilled that you came up here.
Thank you for having me.
It was an awesome experience.
Yeah, like, it was great.
Yeah. Congratulations on the new album. Congratulations on everything that's going on. And we really appreciate you taking off your coat. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks everyone for listening to this new episode of A Waste Time with It's the Real Jeff. People want to find out more about us. I'm Eric with the curly hair. You're Jeff with the glasses. Together we are It's the Real, no apostrophe, no spaces. If people want to find out more about this podcast, it's called A Waste of Time with It's the Real. If people want to find out more about what's going on with us, Jeff, where can they
you
go?
Can always go to itsthereal.com, itsthereal.com. You can also find us on all streaming platforms, including Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, talking about CastBox, Acast, Overcast, all the casts.
YouTube.com/itsthereal. Jeff, I also want to tell people real quick, we have another podcast that we do with Styles P and Chic Looch of
also
the Locks.
Jadakiss of the Locks.
And Jadakiss shows up sometimes. We have a podcast called Two Jews and Two Black Dudes Review the Movies. It is also available wherever you listen or watch podcasts. And this week, just yesterday, Groundhog Day, we reviewed the movie Groundhog Day. So go check that out right now. This is the time of the podcast where we like to shout people out who are good and loyal listeners of ours. And I asked the internet today, I said, hey, good and loyal listeners, do us a favor. If you want to shout at the most random celebrity you can think of, the more left field, the better. And Jeff, did anybody respond?
Joshy Gons, our guy in LA, our photographer, said Steve Carell, aka Michael Scott, aka Michael Scarn, formerly known as the donor of Scott's Tots.
Shout out to Daniel David, our guy Abu Calves out there in London Town, who shouted out the soccer player Ronaldo.
Cash Money Josh said Andrew Schultz.
Shout out to Alex, aka Cho Daddy, who just won a t-shirt from us, for shouting out Woj, Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN.
JRD the musician said Al Yankovic.
Shout out to Hen Season, who wants a shout out for his guy Murphy Lee,
who doesn't get enough shout outs if we're going to be honest. Mitch Gaines said Shea Serrano, who's been on the podcast before.
Shout out to our guy Trav Dave OHIO, who wanted to shout out, I guess, himself and Mr. Dalvin from Jodeci.
Shout out to the Don Coogee, who said Whoopi Goldberg.
Shout out to O Heidi, who wants to shout out Tom Brady, who I guess is not going to leave the Pats. Who knows?
Yeah, I wasn't really paying attention. DStreet815 also said Al Yankovic.
Shout out to your boy Nate B, who wants to shout out Barbara Streisand.
That's a really good one. Leezy TMNY said Dave Coulier, Fuller House now, but Full House before.
Devin No One Cares wanted to shout out Jaquan.
Luigi, aka Mario, said Karl Malone 32.
Well, not only that, he also shouted out Backpack Kid, so big shouts.
Man, I want to
Backpack Kid.
We gotta get Backpack Kid up here still. Smash Lames said, my name is JB, who is an Emmy Award winner.
Smoking Aces wanted to shout out, and this is left field, Candace Owen.
Well, fuck that. Road Almighty said Tony Robbins and Fran Drescher.
Supreme Kadeem wants to shout out Josh Wolf and Hennessy Williams, hashtag fill the hole.
Cash Mac Money 6 said a great rap bar could be flipped using at Cheryl Crow.
_ Yanye _ the doctor of streetwear wants to shout out Paul Pogba, the football player.
Benjamin McKnucklepeck, AMW781, said Andrew Yang.
The past pawn wants to shout out the wrestler The Iron Sheik.
Chanel Ali said at Helen Hunt, but also an honorable mention to Helen Hunt's forehead.
Photo Queen 24, the big old Greek, wants to shout out Jim Carrey.
Honor Roll Rose said, I would at Tink, but Sheik hasn't told me his IG yet, so let's just go with Cardo Got Wings, since you know he's 4'11".
Shout out to Two Jews and Two Black Dudes Review the Movies. Devious Minds wants to shout out the evil napkin, Nardwar, our friend.
Don, aka Boots, said Jaleel White, Steve Urkel.
Nick Cross, just for giggles, wants to shout out Deshaun Watson of the Houston Texans.
Skeevy Wonder, which is a great name, by the way.
Great name.
said the real Gilbert Gottfried.
Magic SP wants to shout out John Calipari.
Who is up next, said Jim Carrey.
Clever Lines wants to shout out Travis Barker.
100 Grand Royce, said Pauly Shore.
Z Chillin wants to shout out Stephen King, the writer.
Wait, none of these people even follow us. Who are these people? Oh, Los Def said Barbara Corcoran.
Shout out to Sleeping Probably, who wants to shout out Quavo Guerrero Jr., Mexican Warrior.
Tea with Tammy said Charlie Wilson, who actually is in town right now. Maybe we should get him back on the podcast.
Art by KJ wants to shout out Amanda Seale.
Kensworth said Sharon Stone.
Company Eli or Eli Company, one of the two, wants to shout out Hannibal Buress.
Keep it G. Floyd said David Alan Greer. Again, doesn't follow us.
Ash DeStampede. Max Julian wants to shout out Sir Michael Rocks of the Cool Kids.
Cortez Classic said Snowden.
Sight and Sound, Sight Sound Company wants to shout out Hillary Duff.
Cat Gang 12, which is a great name. I don't get it, but it's a great name. Said Bill Burr, also can you shout out Sarah, it's far from over, Swyatt.
Mr. Albert Wright, who also goes by Problematic Tony, says yeah, yeah, yeah. Shout out to Condoleezza Rice and all my Africans, you heard?
This is going to get us in trouble at one point. Rich Homie Chuck doesn't follow us. Said, Boomer Valderrama, tell him your AKAs.
Well, so at least he's aware.
I mean, that's better. Who are these people?
Keep It Basement, who does follow us, Jeff.
Yes.
Wants to shout out Skip Bayless.
Day One Davey said Sarah McLaughlin, who actually got shouted out on our Jay Worthy podcast.
Shout out to our guy Dennis, Phantom Beats VA, who says, let's finally get a shout out for me. Hamill himself, Mark Hamill from Star Wars. Shout out.
Yeah, a movie that we don't care about.
To our guy Dennis.
Torian B, our guy from across town at 1199, said to shout out the guy who wears a mask from the St. Lunatics.
Jeff, he has a name.
Slow Down.
Shout out to Slow Down and all you St. Lunatics out there. As always, not for real, for real.
Sure, sure.
We'll see you guys next week. Bye.